The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable John W. Turner presiding.
Thank you and good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
We are here on case number 4221111. That's Talisha Banks versus the City of Rockford. For the appellant, Mr. Craig Sandberg is appearing, and for the appellee, Mr. Michael Atkus. Mr. Sandberg, would you please proceed with your argument?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. We're here to talk about a motion for summary judgment that was granted by the trial court in Winnebago County. It is the appellant's position that the trial court erred when it granted summary judgment in favor of the City of Rockford and against the plaintiff when it substituted its judgment instead of a jury's judgment as to the credibility of the evidence and witnesses. The case involves a motor vehicle accident that took place on November 5th, 2017. The facts in this case are not in dispute. There is post-event information that we have, as well as information that was collected during the event, as well as one witness who observed the event. There's a traffic stop that took place related to motor vehicle tags. Officer Jamie Cox, who was he was on the force less than a year with the City of Rockford at the time, effectuated that motor vehicle stop. Eddie Patterson was in a pickup truck at the time. He had been pulled over. When the stop took place, based on some of the information from the City of Rockford, and it appears that a license was given that wasn't Eddie Patterson's. It was for Mr. Turner, Carl Thurman, I'm sorry. And then at some point in time, and this is when Frank Luando, who is the sole witness, his testimony becomes relevant. Officer Cox is at the door of Mr. Patterson's truck. He doesn't see the door being opened, but he does see the door when it is opened. At some point in time, that vehicle then takes off, Mr. Patterson's vehicle. We'll call it prematurely leaving from the traffic stop or any other reason. As that vehicle is going away, Mr. Luando observes Officer Cox move with that vehicle. He doesn't see Officer Cox grabbing onto anything. He doesn't see Officer Cox being hung up or dragged on that. He just sees it coming along. They sees Officer Cox moving along with the vehicle. What we know from reconstruction information later is that Mr. Patterson's vehicle traveled northbound on that street. He was shot twice by Officer Cox while he was in the cab of the vehicle. Presumably that would have disabled him. Mr. Patterson's truck then hit a tree that was at the church at the end of the street. There was a lot of wreckage from that truck, and Officer Cox was dislodged from that vehicle, and he too sustained injuries that led to his death. In the trial court.
Excuse me. Good morning, counsel. Yeah. I'd like to interrupt and focus for a minute on one of the issues here. The main issue really is willful and wanton. And your summary of the facts really, I think, toward the fact or the point that there really aren't too many facts that are known here because of the circumstances of that event. However, with respect to Officer Cox being either attached to or moving with the vehicle once it began moving, the only fact we really have, or one of the key facts, is the transcript about defendant running. And that is probably the only specific information we have. However, is that not consistent not only with perhaps his action in not moving away from the vehicle per training guidelines? And we saw in the record testimony of one of the officers with respect to that, but also consistent with either unskillfulness, fear for safety, and negligence in his being attached to that truck. And in that circumstance, how can we draw any specific inferences that his conduct was willful and wanton?
I appreciate that. So you're correct. Other than Mr. Luando's testimony about observing Mr. Cox moving along with the vehicle, we do have the audio call of saying he's running. I think that a jury would be able to infer from that. And if you listen to the audio, it sounds like it sounds like Officer Cox is moving or is being moved or something. It's not as though he's standing still at the time. And I think that a jury might be able to piece those two pieces together of seeing him going along with the vehicle and also hearing him call in his running, which would suggest that he is moving with the vehicle with the intention of getting with the vehicle, staying with the vehicle. And that would be reckless. That would be, when we talk about willful and wanton, there's the intentional aspect and the non-intentional aspect of it. And I think that the courts have frequently characterized it as reckless. And I refer to it however the court wants me to, but we could talk about it in the showing an utter indifference or conscious disregard for the safety of himself or others.
Is that reckless?
Go ahead.
Indifference, is that reckless?
Is what would chasing after the, what's that?
Does utter indifference equal reckless?
I think that there is case law out there that suggests that they are synonymous. They're in between that intentional aspect and the negligent aspect. But I'm happy to use the language specifically from the Tort Immunity Act and its definition of willful wanton conduct. But I think that running after a vehicle in order to chase down someone who's just prematurely leaving that traffic stop for whatever reason would show a conscious disregard for the safety of himself and others or utter disregard for the safety of himself and others. But to Justice Zinoff's point, I think that audio of he's running, that gives us some insight into, and it's the only insight we have, into what was going on with Officer Cox.
Well, and, let me stop you there, Kelly. Sure. You seem to be interpreting he's running with I'm running. And I don't think that's a reasonable interpretation, is it? Are you suggesting that the officer was running? Because he is running is not the same as I am running. You agree with that, I would
think. Oh, absolutely. Sure. But I think that what he's running is demonstrating is that the vehicle is moving because he was never outside of the vehicle. So we know he wasn't actually on foot and running. But it is because of the audio aspect of it, and you hear the movement that is indicating, and it would provide an explanation for what Officer Cox was doing when Eddie Patterson was moving away. And I think that a jury could conclude that Officer Cox was disregarding his training that we have Lieutenant Givens talking about, that you're supposed to open up that space and let the vehicle go.
And but that's not per se willful and wanton.
It can be used as evidence of willful and wanton conduct. Stop. It is not per, right, absolutely.
But we still, I know I'm interrupting here, but
yeah, that's okay.
He is, we do not know his frame of mind, his intention. We know he was attached to that truck somehow.
Correct.
But we don't know. That's the key that's missing here. And that supports the trial court's granting of the motion to reconsider. I mean, she elaborated specifically about the lack of evidence with respect to that in her written memorandum and opinion, correct?
I understand what the court is saying, but the court also found that it could be interpreted as willful and wanton conduct. And to your point about that, as far as the insight into what Officer Cox was specifically talking about, I've tried cases and have won cases at trial in the explanation that's given by the officer is at odds with the evidence, and the jury just doesn't believe them. that they shot in fear of their life. Because if they had done that, that would have been self-defense as a complete defense. And that would have resulted in a defense verdict, but they didn't believe them, even though that's the insight that they gave. So in this particular case, we know factually what was going on, that he was attached to the vehicle in some fashion. And we know that there was Officer Cox indicating an observation of he's running. And I think that the jury can surmise, using their own common experiences, when they hear about he's running and seeing and having somebody observe the individual officer going with the vehicle, that they could reach the conclusion that Officer Cox was acting recklessly when he attached himself to the vehicle. If that's
what wait. Yeah. You said attached himself. We don't know how he got attached. There is no evidence. The only witness we have, didn't get that information. That isn't part of the record as far as I know, counsel. Maybe I've missed something.
No, I understand what you're saying, but Officer Cox, what he says he's running isn't saying, I'm attached to the vehicle, I'm stuck, I'm hung up, I'm getting dragged, anything like that. And so I think that the jury can look at what Mr. Luanda has testified to about what his observations are. And in listening to what Officer Cox's own words were, that he's running, and reach a conclusion based on their listening to the evidence and their conclusions about what that evidence suggests to them, that is demonstrative of Officer Cox acting in a willful and wanton fashion.
Explain to me why that isn't pure speculation versus a reasonable inference. And I understand that's kind of a hard concept. When do we go from reasonable inference to pure speculation? Because it seems to me that's your problem here, that your argument kind of does that. But I'd like to hear from you why it does not, in your view.
Yeah, well, in going to my example that I use with Justice Zinoff, that in other cases where an officer has testified that I was in fear of my own safety or the safety of others, and that's why I shot somebody. That's the only evidence into the insight that the officer was sharing with the jury. And yet the jury, despite hearing that from the officer's own testimony, doesn't believe that. So in that case, the jury is reading the evidence differently than the way the officer wants them to believe it. So in this particular case, a jury can look at and listen to Mr. Luando's testimony about what he observed, he doesn't characterize anything as frantically kicking his legs or anything like that. And listening to audio of he's running and hearing the audio and the way it is, and whether or not there's panic or not panic in Officer Cox's voice, however they choose to view that. I'm sorry. Oh, I heard something in the audio.
You very well have just the technology. So go ahead.
Yeah. But it's for the jury to decide how they're interpreting that particular information. It isn't so one-sided that it could only be not willful and wanton and only negligence and mere inadvertence or anything like that. That's not the case. There is sufficient information and evidence in this case that would allow a jury to not speculate, but to use their reasonable inferences from the evidence that's available to them and the conclusions, and based on their own experiences and common sense, to conclude that Officer Cox, when he called in he's running and then is observed moving along with the vehicle, however he did that, whether it was attached by hand or holding on, or there isn't any evidence that he was hung up or got caught or anything like that, and the jury could fairly conclude, and it wouldn't be rank speculation, that he was acting willful and wantonly.
Well, we don't know from the evidence that he wasn't caught up, that it didn't catch on his clothing. I mean, the witness didn't tell us that. There is no evidence about that. So that would, if he were, that would certainly contribute to an inference of unskillfulness, inartfulness, inability to separate himself from the vehicle per the training he got. So we don't really know that, do we?
Your point is well taken, Justice. There is no evidence that the city has elicited to suggest or argue or opinions that are going to be offered that Officer Cox was caught on that vehicle or was hung up on that vehicle. There would be some type of evidence. There may be tears in his uniform. There may be scratches in his body. There may be anything like that that could be supported. And in the absence of that, that would be rank speculation to argue that he was caught.
There may be no tears in his clothing. I mean, as Justice Turner said, I'm having trouble with the line between an inference and speculation here. I'm having the same difficulty as Justice Turner, obviously.
I hear you. I'm not sure I agree with you. I think in this particular case, given the evidence, it wouldn't be rank speculation for them to reach that conclusion. It would be the inferences that they reach. Summary judgment is only supposed to be granted when it can't be a different outcome, can't be reached, where it's only leading to one conclusion. In this particular case, that's just not the circumstance. There are, and I've argued in my brief, both in the opening brief as well as the reply, there are multiple ways that a jury could view this and multiple ways that both myself and the city can argue the case, and it's left to the jury to make a decision on what they find to be the case.
Counsel, in looking at this record, the thing that kind of surprised me, struck me as odd, if you will, is that the record doesn't have an autopsy regarding the officer. How did the officer die? And wouldn't that possibly be helpful for the trier of fact and for us and as a reviewing court to know what the cause of death of the officer was? And why isn't that in the record? Yeah. So if you remember my question, could you pick up?
Sure. You were asking about the autopsy. So Officer Cox is not a party to the lawsuit, and neither myself nor the city opted to put his health or the autopsy as part of the record. Maybe that's a HIPAA related issue. I'm not sure that it's particularly germane to the issues of this particular case. I will tell you, just so you know, what ended up happening is a closed head injury, because after the vehicle struck the tree, he was thrown from that vehicle. And that's how his injuries were sustained. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I don't want you to reveal something that's not in the record, but as far as the record shows, I think it was just that the officer was found about 20 feet from the vehicle or where the vehicle crashed. So that's really all we know.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So that's where his body was found, and then he was later transported to a hospital and passed away from closed head injury.
Okay, and
obviously that's a short form of the autopsy. The autopsy is more robust than that, but
you have been referring to an audio, of what the officer said, but is the audio in the record?
I believe that the audio is in the record.
Okay. You still have a couple minutes left.
Okay. The other thing I want to point out, Your Honor, is that this is as it relates to the willful and wanton conduct, the plaintiff's alleged willful and wanton conduct occurred as it related to the traffic stop itself, as well as there was willful and wanton conduct in shooting Eddie Patterson twice in the vehicle. The position on that the plaintiff takes in that is that the officer climbing into or onto the car created the condition. And so Officer Cox, if the reason, and we don't know why he shot Eddie Patterson, but if the reason was in order to stop the vehicle that he was climbing into with his service revolver and then discharged it into Eddie's body twice, that was willful one, and that was showing a utter conscious disregard for his safety and the safety of others, for anybody that was on the road, that when Officer Cox was disabling the person who was in control of that vehicle, that was willful and wanton as well. So I wanted to make sure that that was not waived, although it was suggested it was waived by the appellee in their response brief. It was never waived. It has always been part of the plaintiff's position that this is a two-part circumstance.
So, and if the officer, go ahead, Justice.
Was that argued? Thank you. Was that argued in the trial court, however? My understanding that this was raised for the first time on appeal.
I think I addressed that in the reply brief, that it wasn't ever waived, that it was always addressed. It was not as the city hadn't attacked that. In the original summary judgment briefs, the city's position was that there wasn't evidence of willful wanton conduct, and there wasn't evidence that Officer Cox intentionally discharged his weapon. And so that was kind of the first go around. And then as it related to the motion for reconsideration of that summary judgment, the primary argument that the city was then waiving is that the court chose the wrong definition for willful and wanton. And I don't even think that in its order related to the motion for reconsideration, the court said, yes, I used the wrong definition of willful and wanton. Had I used the right definition, it would have been a denial. I think that in this particular case, the reconsideration was just a redo by the city of the first motion, as opposed to the way it was, if it were a true reconsideration. But in any event, as it relates to the issue of our position on the willful and wanton shooting of Eddie Patterson, that was never waived. And I addressed that in my reply brief.
Thank you.
So unless the court has any other questions, I'll defer to the city.
No questions at this time. You will have rebuttal. Mr. Atkins, please proceed with your argument.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm sorry. I think I heard one of those technical noises. Good morning, Michael Atkins. May it please the court, Michael Atkins. I'm here this morning on behalf of the defendant appellee, the city of Rockford, to ask this court to affirm the well-reasoned judgment of Judge Fabiano in the trial court, granting summary judgment in the city's favor. The issue in this case is straightforward. It's easy to describe. It's whether there's evidence in the record from which a reasonable juror could conclude that Officer Cox acted willfully and wantonly as defined by the Tort Immunity Act during his traffic stop of the decedent.
So counsel, explain please for us why the trial court did not move beyond its position as gatekeeper and deny the plaintiff right to a jury trial when it held there was no evidence in the record from which a jury could conclude that Officer Cox was guilty of willful and wanton conduct when he held on to this vehicle as it was moving.
Cut right to the chase, Judge. I appreciate that. There's no evidence to show, and I think as Your Honor had questioned counsel about, there's no evidence to show why. Even if we infer that the Officer Cox's grab of the car was intentional, there's no evidence to infer why the car was grabbed. This morning, counsel argued that he thinks it's a reasonable inference from the comment made over the radio that he's running. I think fairly the only inference that can be drawn from there is that Officer Cox was describing what he saw. I'm not sure how much more you can infer from this simple statement of he's running, other than Officer Cox was observing the plaintiff trying to leave the traffic stop and presumably was trying to alert other officers of that fact.
Well, let me ask this question, because the question seems to be whether or not a jury could infer that from the facts that are present. These two facts, does a jury have an ability to take those two facts and say it's plausible that Officer Cox was running?
Well, I think there's, and I think the way you phrased that, Judge, it kind of betrays the issue. Whether it's plausible, and whether a jury could reasonably infer that based on the evidence is two separate issues. A plausibility standard is a motion to dismiss standard. At summary judgment, the plaintiff needs to come forth with evidence to show that Officer Cox's conduct not maybe was willful and wanton, or could have been willful and wanton, depending on a myriad of things that may have happened that none of us can say, because unfortunately both parties to the traffic stop are deceased. But he has to come forth with evidence that shows it's willful and wanton.
Correct. But this seems to be an argument pieced together circumstantially to say these two pieces of evidence mean that potentially it could have occurred this way, and therefore there's an inference that the jury could follow. That seems to be the argument.
It just, and again, this raises one of the hardest questions in law that I think we've already identified this morning is where do you draw the line between what's speculation and what's a reasonable inference? And there's frankly no real way to define that sort of line drawing. It's judicial line drawing that we have to base on precedent and what other courts have done before. And it reminds me a bit of, I think it was what Justice Potter said about pornography, was, I can't say what it is, but I know when I see it. So I think in a case where there's evidence, that's recognizable. For instance, in the hypothetical that counsel discussed this morning about a shooting where an officer would come in and explain why he shot, but the jury would be free to disbelieve his testimony. But in order for that to be sustainable or survive a motion, there would have to be other evidence. Presumably in that case, there'd be some evidence, whether it be physical evidence, eyewitness testimony from someone else, photographs, video, some other physical evidence that the plaintiff could rely on in order to prove a willful and wanton act. And that's what's missing here from the simple bits of going with the car and he's running. We don't know, even if we assume, as the district, or the, not the district court, but the trial court did, that the grab of the car, he grabbed the car rather than was dragged. We don't know if it was an intentional grab. We don't know if it was a momentary unconscious reaction. We don't know if it was an inadvertent, unskillful act. And I'm not saying, and I want it to be clear here, I'm not saying that this is a case where the evidence could only amount to negligence, and plaintiff can't prove conduct beyond negligence. I'm saying in this case, there is no evidence either way. There's no evidence to show, to reasonably support a conclusion that this was negligent, or that it was intentional, or that it consciously disregarded safety, or that it was utterly indifferent. I think what the court needs to bear in mind, at least when it's trying to make the distinction between what's reasonable inference and what's speculation in this case, is that willful and wanton, at least as it's defined by the Tort Immunity Act, involves a mens rea, where there needs to be some evidence of the reason for the officer's conduct and why it was done. Now, that could come from an officer. It can in this case. Frankly, in most cases that I've seen involving officer misconduct, it comes from the victim of that misconduct, who gives a different story than the officer of what factually happened. And the plaintiff's version of the facts can't, you know, don't jive with the officer. So there's a question of facts for the jury about who are we going to believe. But here, unfortunately, we don't have Officer Cox's side of the story. We don't have the decedent's side of the story. We don't have any video. We don't have any photographs. We don't have any eyewitnesses other than what someone saw from across the street, and certainly wasn't able to observe any more specific interaction between Officer Cox and Mr. Patterson that could provide some explanation one way or another about what was going on in that car, and, you know, and whether Officer Cox's actions could rise to the level of, you know, conscious disregard or utter indifference for safety. I just think ultimately it's a burden of proof issue, and and it's the plaintiff's burden to come forth with evidence. It's not the defendant's burden to come forth with evidence to show, these tears in the shirt show that it could have only been negligence. It's the plaintiff's burden of proof to prove his case, and on summary judgment to show that he has evidence to prove his case. And I just think the record is too silent on what happened. I'm sorry, Justice Turner, is that?
Yeah, it is.
I'm sorry, you're just a little bit quieter than everyone else.
Yeah, I think I had that problem last time. I'll try to correct it, not right now, but later on. But here's my question. With these undisputed facts, why isn't it a good argument for plaintiff to say that this is the perfect case that goes to the jury? Because most case law says that juries decide, or fact finders decide, what is or is not willful and wanton conduct.
Jurors decide what's willful and wanton conduct, as the case law says, when there's evidence to support that claim, when there's a baseline level of evidence to sustain it. And the cases are clear on that, and summary judgments are granted in willful and wanton cases regularly. There's plenty of reported cases finding that there simply wasn't enough evidence to sustain that or to go to a jury. Here, there's no facts of what happened. It's an unfortunate situation where you understand plaintiff's quest for the truth here, to find out how their father died, but there's no one to really provide any meaningful insight. And I think all a jury would have to go on in this case, other than a couple random facts that don't piece together to much, is frankly their biases and priors on, you know, what they think of police and what they think of people who get stopped by police. And I think it's fair to say that people tend to have strong feelings on both of those issues in either way. And I think in a case like this, it's especially dangerous to let a case go to jury with such little facts, with such I hate to say it, but a politically charged issue you're putting before the jury with almost no evidence. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. Thank you. You have more time if you need it.
You know, just if I guess I just like to make a few points about some of the case law that counsel cited in his brief. Specifically, the Robles versus City of Chicago case. And I think what's important to distinguish that case from this one is in that case, and I'm reading a quote directly from the case, the court noted that conflicts between the testimony of the officers and potential conflicts with the physical evidence leave unresolved issues that could support a finding of willful and wanton. So this was a shooting case. This was a shooting case where the officers testified that they were in fear for their reasonable fear for their lives and the lives of others when they shot the decedent. But the difference in that case is there was physical evidence which contradicted that evidence. There was physical evidence to show that, and I may be wrong on the granular details, but I believe it was that the decedent was shot in the back. So from a shot in the back, it's a reasonable inference for someone to draw that at that moment the shot was fired, the officers weren't in any immediate danger for their lives or the lives of others, which would have justified the use of deadly force in that situation. But again, based on, you know, not just simply disbelieving an officer's testimony, but based on some physical evidence in the record that showed that the officer's story was bunk, to put it frankly. The other case counsel cites that I want to discuss briefly was the Sawanski versus Village of Lombard case, which was a vehicle pursuit case where the officer in question was chasing the suspect in his own squad car. And there, the evidence that supported a willful and wanton claim going to the jury was a 6.5 mile pursuit, the duration of the suit being over 8 minutes, and the fact that there was a near collision and an actual collision that had occurred during this pursuit prior to the collision, which gave rise to the suit. So in other words, there is evidence that the officer engaged, like the Tort Immunity Act said, in a course of action over minutes in which he had seen accidents, he had seen dangers, he had seen damage and destruction based on what he was doing, but he evidenced by continuing the chase that he consciously decided to disregard those dangers that he had seen happen and continue to chase the suspect. So I think that's clearly distinguishable on the facts in this case. Finally, counsel mentions a case in his brief, which I think he calls Dudley versus City of Chicago. The appellate court calls it Givens. I think there was two plaintiffs. And there's, to my reading of that case, there's nothing that analyzes sufficiency of evidence on a willful and wanton claim. So I frankly don't see how it's relevant in this case. The issue in that case seemed to be whether a special interrogatory given to a jury contradicted a general verdict and whether the form of the general interrogatory was proper. So I really think that that case is a bit of a red herring or a non-starter as far as counseling in favor of or compelling reversal in this case. I think I've covered what I want. If the justices don't have any other questions, I will end, conclude by asking you to affirm the circuit court's opinion granting summary judgment in the city's favor, and thanking you for your time and attention on this matter this morning.
I see no questions. Thank you for your argument. Mr. Sandberg, do you have any rebuttal?
I do have a few. So the first thing is, counsel for the city conceded that there are multiple different ways that a finder of fact could look at this evidence. They could see it as negligent, or they could see it as something other than negligence, which would include willful and wanton conduct. He admitted to the possibility of that. Later in the argument, he talks about that there's a couple of random facts. These aren't random facts. This is evidence. The evidence is what Mr. Luando observed. The evidence is what Officer Cox called into. And the evidence is the autopsy showing that Mr. Patterson had been shot twice. There's a gunshot wound to the left chest. And I think one of the cases that the council had talked about was the Robles case versus City of Chicago, where someone had been shot in the back. Mr. Patterson was also shot in the upper back. There's evidence from autopsy of that. Later, after using the term couple random facts, despite the observations, the call and the autopsy, it talks about that this is the wrong kind of case in this politically charged environment. That's not a reason to affirm a summary judgment. There is a question of material fact as to whether the actions of Officer Cox on behalf of the city of Rockford constituted willful and wanton conduct. A trial judge is confronted with jurors and their biases all the time, and it is incumbent upon a trial judge to weed out those people who are predisposed to finding bringing in a position one way or the other, saying that I support all cops or I support all African-American people. There is the possibility of getting a fair-minded juror to hear these cases. But affirming a summary judgment motion where there is supposed to be no other way to look at the facts would be the wrong thing to do in this case, because there is, by the city's own admission, other ways other than negligence that these facts can be thought of, characterized, inferences drawn. And that's for the jury. That's the province of the jury. And again, as I indicated in my opening comments to the court, the role of the finder of facts was usurped by the trial judge's granting of the summary judgment on behalf of the city. The trial court correctly held in the first instance, when the summary judgment motion was originally denied, when Judge Fabiano found that there were questions of material fact that precluded the granting of summary judgment, so that it would be left for the jury to decide whether or not the acts and or omissions of Officer Cox constituted willful and wanton conduct.
Counsel, let me ask it this way.
Yeah.
Clearly questions of material fact, but doesn't this case lack potential answers? I know that's a hard way of sort of answering a question, but the jury's going to have to guess. They may accept your skillful argument and guess. I guess I'm looking for more inferences that somehow the officer was running, shouldn't have been running, something more.
Well, I think that, as I had indicated earlier, I think that the audio and the transcription of saying he's running, it is demonstrative of what Officer Cox was observing. And it provides an explanation for what he did in response to that vehicle running, which is what Mr. Luando saw, which is that he went with the vehicle, held on to, grabbed onto, did something. It isn't so clear in this case that this court nor the trial court can say there is no way a finder of fact could ever say that what Mr. Luando saw and what Officer Cox called in and what the autopsy showed, that there was never a chance that there was willful and wanton conduct on behalf of the city of Rockford. It's just not possible. The idea that
Mr. Sandberg, yeah. I want to ask a question before you run out of time. It appears to me that the eyewitness also said that the officer was, quote, in trouble or danger, end quote, and that the officer may have been, quote, tangled up, end quote, with the truck. Do you agree that that is also in the evidence?
I will agree that there were Mr. Luando's testimony, if it's all looked at, it was all over the place. And, you know, because obviously, you know, the city's council is trying to elicit certain things and I'm trying to elicit certain things. And I think at the end of the day, a jury should be able to hear Mr. Luando's testimony in total about what he observed or what he thinks he observed or how he chose to characterize it. Because remember, a lot of these questions are the way that, you know, trial attorneys ask them is intended to elicit certain things. So I would agree that Mr. Luando's testimony has lots of different shades, some more favorable to the plaintiff's version, some more favorable to the defendant's version. And that's great because that gives argument on both sides that's available, but it doesn't feed into the idea that there isn't any other way that there's no way a jury could conclude that this is willful and wanton conduct. Counsel also talked about...
Hate to tell you, you are out of time.
Okay.
So we appreciate both of your arguments, and the court will, at this point, take the matter under advisement. The case is submitted, and we now stand in recess.